Welcome to the Get Families Talking podcast with Hafsha, your host. Join us as we introduce various guests with exciting discussions to stimulate different generations of families into conversation. When we start, families listen. When the listening stops, that's when families get talking.
Hello and Asalaamu Alaikum listeners, and welcome to Get Families Talking on Unity FM with Hafsha. Now, have we got a show for you? I tell you, we have definitely got something that is going to get families talking. I have to say there has been some excitement, certainly with some of the people I've been chatting to about this show, because we are going to be discussing a topic which seems to have a lot of relevance for a lot of families out there. And unfortunately, there is still a lot of muddling up and some concerns as to what families can do. So we've got a great show lined up for you today. And I'm delighted to say that we are joined on the show today again with our resident, I would say, resident GP, Dr. Yasmin. Dr. Yasmin, welcome to our show. Jazakallah so much again for sparing the time to share your thoughts with us.
Assalamu alaikum, Hafsha, and thank you very much for inviting me again. If you keep inviting me, I'm going to keep on coming. That's how it works.
That's super. No, and we definitely will be doing that. And of course, we're joined with an expert as well on the show today. And our expert, our second expert, I should say, is a lady called Nora Young. And Nora is joining us to talk to us about neurodiversity. And some of you will be thinking, what on earth is that? That's such a long word. But yes, Nora is the expert on this for very many different reasons. Now, I can't really introduce Nora. I am going to pass the baton to Nora. Please, Nora, welcome to our show, Get Families Talking.
Hi, Hafsha. It's so great to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me. So my name's Nora Young, and I run a non-profit organisation in Birmingham called Birmingham Resilience Education and Wellbeing Services, but everyone knows us as BRUS. So BRUS CIC is how everyone knows us. And we are a small but growing organisation in Birmingham that are here to support families who have children, young people who have ADHD, autism, or other neurodiversity. And we're here to support the families. We're all people with lived experience, and it's about us helping them understand what's going on with their children, with their young people, and giving them support as well.
Super. Now, you mentioned a couple of words there, actually, which I think, I understand, but it might be some of our listeners will be thinking, what does that mean? Lived experience. Please break that down for us.
Well, we believe that actually some of the best people to help you are people who have a history of that themselves. You know, we can talk to professionals, right? We can have medical experts, we can have teachers talk to us about things, but actually when you're talking to people that live with it themselves, that their families live with this, then, you know, it helps you relate much more. So, yeah. You know, so we often talk about experts by experience.
Okay. So they are really experts in their condition because they're living with that condition, or they're supporting a family member who has that condition.
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, those two conditions that you mentioned there, autism, ADHD.
Yeah.
What's the difference between them, please?
Okay, so they're very, very connected. Now, a lot of people have heard of autism. They may have heard of ADHD, but they don't really understand what that's all about. But they're both neurodevelopmental conditions. Basically, we're born with it. It means that our brains are just wired differently. It is something that you don't develop. It's just how you're born. And it just means that you have a brain that's wired slightly differently, that you think slightly differently, you react slightly differently. And ADHD and autism are really quite connected. And you quite often find that they run in the same families.
So when you say they run in the same family, Would it be fair to say that they can be genetic conditions? If a parent has it, is it likely that a child would have it?
Incredibly likely. Now, this is something that there's really only been an understanding of this in recent times, particularly with ADHD. Now, ADHD is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. It's a horrible name. We really want it changed. And for a long time, it was considered something that was like a behavior disorder in children. What we know now is it isn't. It is something that runs in families. And if you have a child with ADHD, there is a very good chance that at least one of their parents has ADHD. And if they don't, then it might be an uncle, an auntie, cousins. And we know now that there's lots of genetic factors in
Wow.
ADHD.
Yeah, because I know there's a lot of information about this now, whereas in the previous years we would have said, oh, it's a naughty child. Yeah. And you must see this a lot as well, Dr. Yasmin, in your work as well. You must have parents who come to you and say, I just can't get him to behave. And maybe it's something that a parent hasn't thought about. You know, they just think it's bad parenting or it's that child.
Yes, you're right, Hafsha. So we've, in general practice, we've had to change our mindset as well. As you said before, we'd call them a naughty child. There's even a code to put behavioural problems because we didn't have an understanding of neurodiversity. But now, actually, parents have got a better understanding themselves. So they're actually coming forward and saying, I think my child has autism, or I think my child has ADHD. And also, when they read about it on the internet to learn more about it, to support their child, a light bulb goes off for them and they think, oh, hang on a minute. That's my life story as well. I was like that since I've been a child. Or they sense there's always been something there that, you know, they couldn't put their finger on, and it's actually making them realize that they've got the condition. So we're making many more referrals for both children and adults with the condition.
And do you know, I mean, we do seem to be more aware of both of these conditions now, don't we? And it seems like every other week you read a story where somebody in the news has diagnosed themselves, it seems almost, and they're saying, you know, I suddenly understand now why I was like that as a child and why my behavior, why I react like that to certain things. But do you find that there are more people now almost coming to you and saying, actually, I think I've got this condition?
Yeah, so I think it's because people are more aware, but I think Nora can guide me. Is there actually a higher incidence as well, or do you think it is just more down to more awareness and we're making more diagnoses?
This has been a debate that people have had. Is there more autism now? Is there more ADHD? I
Yeah.
honestly believe that it is just that people now recognize it. So that children who in the past would be considered naughty, we now recognize that, oh, actually there might be something going on there that's actually, causing that behavior. There's a lot of adults that are realizing that, actually the more I find out about autism or ADHD, that sounds like it's describing me. So I don't think there's more of it, but I think that now people are aware of it. So people are going learning about it and then going and saying, oh, maybe I should get assessed for this.
Could we possibly take this back a step, please? Because we're talking about conditions, two conditions here, and people, some of our listeners might be thinking, well, actually, tell me what that looks like. What does it look like in a child with ADHD? What are we going to experience with a child?
Right. Well, as I say, in the past, people had this idea that it was a conduct disorder in children. And one of the things that people really associate with it is hyperactivity. So hyperactive children. And for a long time, it was considered to be something that was mainly boys that displayed hyperactivity. So, little boys who couldn't sit down, that were disruptive in class, that were shouting out and whatever. What we know now is there's actually three different types of ADHD. There's hyperactive ADHD, which is that kind of being like driven by a motor almost on the go all the time. There's also inattentive ADHD, which is harder to pick up because children with inattentive ADHD aren't disrupting the classroom. What they're doing is they're zoning out. They're missing things. They're not organized. They're forgetting things. they're often described as daydreamers, maybe, or, you know, absent-minded professor, or, you know, just one of the, a bit of a space cadet, just not always there all the time. And then there's combined ADHD, which is the joy of both. So you've got hyperactivity and inattention. So what you might see in a child is forgetfulness. You've told them something and they've just forgotten it 10 seconds later. Disorganization, you know, that they're not getting the things ready that they need to have. That, you know, you're thinking you're a big girl now, you're a big boy now, why aren't you? You know, you've got to have that ready, and they're not getting that ready. They're not always doing things in the right order. So they won't know what to do first. And as well as perhaps be very chatty, very impulsive. So they'll know the right thing to do, but they won't do it because in the moment they're just impulsive. And so it's looking for those sort of traits. Now, all of those children can do sometimes. You know, every kid can be a bit chatty or a bit, you know, whatever. But it's when you see it on a constant. So it's more than other children. There's several of these traits together.
Okay. Now, you're talking about children.
Mm-hmm.
Is this something that we can spot in babies and younger children? Is it something that manifests itself when they're toddlers? Or could we possibly pick these traits up when they're younger?
They generally don't start assessing for ADHD until you're at least 5 or 6. Very often it's about the year one, because all little children have very short attention. Yeah, all toddlers are on the go all the time, and they're chatty and they're very impulsive. You know, what it is when you start seeing other children sort of pulling away. So you get into year one and there's other children that are able now to sit down and start working. Mm-hmm. And then there are some children that are still running around and are finding that harder. So so you may see traits, but all children develop at different rates. So it's very hard when they're a toddler to go, is this ADHD or is this them just being a toddler and they're just a bit perhaps slower to develop those skills than others? So it really is about age of 5 and 6, year one, year two, that we start to go, okay, this child is not able to sit quietly on the mat listening to the teacher the way that their classmates can.
And do you find that by this stage, a lot of parents are not just tearing their own hair out, but also thinking, I'm failing as a parent here, because why is it that, you know, child X will sit down, behave and play nicely, and my child isn't doing that? It must be my parenting skills.
Blamed and shamed. Obviously, we feel it all the time. Now, me personally, I have 3 children. They're grown now. Thank goodness. And my children are all have ADHD. I had so much advice from my extended family, and I come from a very big family, lots of us, lots of aunties, cousins, whatever, comparing them with other children, thinking, what am I doing wrong? Lots of people giving me advice, as you can imagine. Lots of people saying, you need to be stricter, you need to do whatever. But those things didn't work with my children. And so I felt really blamed and shamed, and that I was a really bad parent. And I see that so often with the families we help, is that, you know, they feel the same, that maybe it's something I'm doing wrong.
Yeah, I can imagine, actually. I'm going to bring this back to Dr. Yasmin. Again, in your surgery, do you find parents who, I can imagine, I mean, conditions like this must lead to children not sleeping very well as well. And of course, if a child isn't sleeping, then that's affecting the mom particularly and the dad as well. So do you find that actually this is affecting parents' health? Do they come into the surgery and say, I'm not feeling well, I'm feeling depressed, it's all down to my child's behaviour?
So what I'll say, Hafsha, is sadly, your parents don't come in for themselves. They'll come in for the child. And obviously, in that conversation, you'll pin down how exactly the whole family is being affected. So even other siblings, the older siblings, if they sharing a bedroom, let's say with a child, as you said, who's having difficulty sleeping, their sleep is going to be disrupted and they've got to go to school the next day as well. So their education is going to be affected. So the whole family is affected. But usually the presentation is the child that's causing the difficulties, shall I phrase it that way. And then in that conversation, obviously, we would ask, well, how are you getting on? And then obviously parents will reveal, yes, well, I'm not sleeping either, and I'm worried all the time. And as Nora said, they'll say, I've got family members saying that, I'm a bad mum, I've done this wrong, I've done that wrong. And so yeah, lots to deal with. The condition affects the whole family.
Gosh, yes. Now, please, Nora, tell us a little bit about autism as well, because you s explained earlier about how they tend to be quite connected as well. But again, yeah, what's autism?
We often talk about the autism spectrum disorder. Now, when we talk about a spectrum, some people think it might be like a line between, a little bit autistic to really autistic, right? Whereas what it really is it's different strands, it's different traits. So if you think of like the light spectrum and all the colors in it, that so. Autism can affect sensory processing. So it might be that you have you're very sensitive to certain things, maybe to touch or to sound or to taste. All the senses could be hypersensitive or go the other way, and that you're undersensitive to certain things. There's can be difference in communication, so that learning language is slightly different in autistic people. And various other things where you're kind of out of step with the way that other people can see the world. You might process emotion differently. You might see emotion different, not be able to recognize neurotypical emotion. You can recognize other autistic people's emotion, which is really interesting. A lot of people say autistic people can't understand emotion. No, can't understand neurotypical emotions. Can understand each other in the same way that neurotypical people can't understand autistic people's emotion expression as well. It goes both way, communication. And so yeah, so it can be that there's differences in communication. Sometimes there can be sensitivity around eye contact, but again, a lot of people go, oh, that child can't be autistic because they can make eye contact. That it's not all autistic people that struggle with eye contact. But some do. So yeah, it's really hard to kind of put it all into one thing because every autistic person's different. So it looks different in different people, but it is again, it's a different way that you're wired in your brain.
Yeah, I sort of feel like you're almost describing all of us. It almost feels like we're all autistic and we've all got a bit of ADHD in us at different times, haven't we? Would you say that's fair?
You hear this all the time. Are we all a bit on the spectrum? Are we all a bit, and I can understand why they say that, because a lot of the things, yeah, we can all be hyperactive sometimes. We could all be, have problems with our sleep. We could all have a sensitivity. But it's on a completely different range when you're autistic or ADHD. And it's constant and it causes difficulties and problems in your life. Because you're so different from the what society expects people to act like. So yeah, it's the same, it's like, everyone can have a trouble sleeping the odd night, but if you suffer from a sleep disorder and never get any sleep, and whatever, it's on a different range. So, I mean, one of the things for, say, a diagnosis with ADHD is that it has had a significant negative impact on your life. So they don't give out a diagnosis just because you get sometimes I'm a bit wacky.
And labeling, I suppose it's good and bad, but I do want to talk more about, attaching labels to children. But I want to just take this to adults as well, because There are lots of adults now who are going and having themselves assessed for these conditions. But are you finding that as well? Are you finding that there is more awareness and more adults now are saying, well, actually, maybe I have got this, maybe I should go for an assessment?
Yeah,
Okay.
and that is because of the understanding of it has changed. Because at one point they honestly thought it was just something that children had, and that it just magically disappeared the day you left school, and that you outgrew ADHD. But what we understand now is that you don't. What you do is you develop strategies. You learn to mask it, you learn to get by, and quite often you learn very unhelpful strategies. So you tackle it using drugs, alcohol, various unhelpful ways to try and deal with the
Nice.
ADHD. And now we're recognizing that actually a lot of people have been diagnosed with other conditions when actually the underlying cause was undiagnosed ADHD. So I wasn't diagnosed until I was 50.
Wow.
And I had been treated for decades with for depression. Because I would have periods of terrible depressive episodes where I could barely move, where my thoughts were very dark. And I'd had lots of antidepressants, I'd had various counselling, I'd done all sorts of things, I'd done all the things that I'd been advised to do. But it turned out that actually it was undiagnosed ADHD, and those depressive episodes were ADHD burnout, which looks like depression, but it comes from a very different cause. And so what we're finding is a lot of people who are going for ADHD assessments, it's after they have been treated for lots of other things in the past. Because it wasn't recognized, the ADHD, because they didn't recognize adults could have it, and it underdiagnosed in women because they thought it was something only little boys had.
Goodness. Nora, can I ask you some personal questions here? And
Of
of
course.
course, we spoke about lived experience here, and thank you so much for sharing that with us. But I want to ask you, I'm just thinking, your life must have been so difficult. You had three children with a condition as well, and you were trying to manage, support them, help them to grow into lovely adults, and at the same time, you're managing your condition as well. Can you just share with our listeners how tough life must have been for you at that time?
I look back at it, and there's times I really don't know how I got through it. But you do, because you're a mother and you keep going, don't you? People say, oh, I don't know how you cope. Well, you do cope. You play the hand that you're dealt and you do it. But it was very hard. So as you say, I have three children, and one of my children in particular really, really struggled and got to the point where their mental health was so poor. They were diagnosed with borderline personality disorder, which we were kind of told there's no treatment for it. They were put on antipsychotics. They were suicidal. It was awful. I had to give up work. I had been a teacher for 27 years. I was a teacher in Birmingham, and I had to give up work to look after my child, which also meant that once I'd given up work, I couldn't afford the rent anymore in the private rented sector, which meant that we became homeless. And I see these struggles in families I support now all the time, is that it affects everything you're dealing with. I was dealing with my own ADHD. I was dealing with my children's ADHD and autism, and all the other things that adults have to deal with. And it's incredibly tough. There were very, very dark times and no support around that I could find when I was going through that. And a lot of shame, because I felt that other people were able to do this. Why wasn't I able to do it? Why were my kids
Yeah.
struggling? And so you didn't even want to reach out for help, because that would, you'd think everyone would judge you as being a bad parent.
And I can imagine lots of relationships as well, lots of relationship issues, maybe relationships breaking down because you're not getting that support and you're constantly feeling that you're feeling judged by others.
Yes, it's I mean, a lot of marriages split up over the strain of raising children with additional needs. As I say, a lot of children with ADHD have at least one ADHD parent. Now, we know that women with ADHD are more likely to end up in domestic violence relationships because we have spent so long feeling that we're to blame for everything. That if we have a partner who is happy to tell us that we're to blame for everything, we will accept that and say, oh, I will try harder. I will try harder. So, again, I work with so many families where, you have people who've got, perhaps they've left a DV relationship, they're trying to deal with their children's issues and they're dealing with their own ADHD at the same time.
What would you say to someone who's listening in to the show today and thinking, actually, I'm in that position and I don't know where to turn?
Dr. Yasmin, I would say go to your GP. Go and get some support. Go and get, I mean, I will give you the details about how to get in contact with our organisation. I am very, very happy to talk to you and help anyone who thinks that this might be me. But reach out for help because people won't judge you. There is so much more support now. And, society is changing. We are starting to recognise this and that. Actually, if you're struggling with your children or with yourself, no one is going. People worry that if I go and say, I'm really struggling with my children, I'm really struggling with this, that social workers are going to swoop in and take your children away from you. And that really isn't the case. There is support out there. You just have to reach out for it. And there are people who will understand and will listen.
Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on this radio station.
I want to bring Dr. Yasmin in on this question, please. Now, Dr. Yasmin, you must see this a lot in surgery, in practice. You must see patients who come and they don't want to open up about their children's behavior. And certainly, they don't want to sit there and admit that, yes, I'm struggling as well. I'm struggling with lack of sleep. I'm struggling with my lack of self-esteem and confidence as well, because I'm constantly being told I'm a bad parent. Do you see this? And I just want you to talk through and please reassure some of our listeners who might be listening in and thinking, well, actually, I do want to go and see my GP. I do need help, but this is what I'm scared of.
So Nora's, made that very valid point that people are scared now that social workers are coming and going to take the children. But that is not the case at all. There is a thing that we actually spoke about, didn't we, before, early help. That's the level before it becomes something that, would require social worker input. So and that's, when we want to see families so that we can help them. So yeah, it needs unpicking. It's part of the GP role when the patient comes in to they come in with a headache, for example, but it's about p unpicking that, isn't it? And saying, well, this could be a tension headache. What's happening at home for you? How's the relationship? How are the children? How are they doing? That sort of thing. Or if they're coming in with a child, obviously we know that there's going to be an impact on them. So we can change the conversation. How about you? How are you feeling? You've described what your child is doing and we're going to support your child. But what about you? What's the impact on yourself and the rest of the family members? Did you know about early help? I can make a referral. It doesn't involve social services. Hopefully you'll get a family support worker attached. They can help the whole family. They've got more time than me to sit down with you and help you and give you support. And I just want to say, look, you there, because there's obviously I work within the NHS, so there's a limit to the NHS services. And we know NHS services sadly have long waiting lists, especially since after COVID as well, it's increased even more. But Nora works in what we call the community, and there's so many other agencies, organizations that don't belong to the NHS, but they're there to help families, parents and children, in the community. So we rely on the great work that people like Nora and others do.
Yeah, amazing, amazing work. In fact, bringing it back, Nora, then please tell us. I mean, because you touched on assessments. Do we do assessments for children?
Yeah, I mean, what I would say is that if any of the things that we've talked about, if you think, well, actually my child is having these problems, the first thing I'd do is go and talk to their school. right? But every school has a SENCO, which is the Special Educational Needs Coordinator. Now you can go and make an appointment to talk to the SENCO at your child's school, and they can start looking at your child's behaviour, and they can start putting support in, seeing if that helps, and they can actually make the referral for the assessments as well. Now, as Dr. Yasmin said, there's the strain on the NHS and whatever means that there can often be quite a long wait for that assessment. But you can get it going, you can get it in process, and then there's support you can get for things that you can do in the meantime while you're waiting for your child's assessment. And I just want to go back to what you were saying about labels. I talk to a lot of parents about this, and they are concerned, well, if I go and ask for an assessment, my child will get labelled, and I don't want them to be limited by having some label stuck on them. And what I say to that is that, if they might have a label that says ADHD, but before that, they had a label that said naughty or lazy or disruptive, right? Which are far worse. I had all those labels for so long, and I had a lot more in my head that I gave myself. So I like to think of it as a care label. I really like the fact that inside my jumper, there is a label that tells me not to put it in boiling water because it will ruin it, and that it needs this, that, and the other. So I like to think of that label as a care label, that actually, if we know what our child needs, we can make sure that we're giving them the support that they need, that the schools are giving them the support that they need, and that they don't grow up feeling ashamed and blamed and depressed because they don't understand why they're not achieving what perhaps their friends or their relatives are doing.
You've put that so eloquently, honestly. I think you are so right, because so many parents out there will be thinking, I don't want to label my child as having this condition because it will follow him around in life or her around in life. But you are right, it's a care label. And if that care can be put into place now, it means that that jumper, I love that analogy, won't shrink. They will actually be more because they've had that extra support given to them.
If I can just tell you about my daughter. Now I have the full permission of my children are all over 18. They're adults. They're giving me permission to talk. I don't use their names, but I do talk about them. Now my daughter was labelled naughty at school. She was labelled an awful lot more than naughty at school, and it was so hard going through all the things that we went through, and we had to fight a lot to get her assessments, but she got her diagnosis of ADHD and autism. She's medicated for ADHD. She is now working as a student nurse. She's at university. She's doing really, really well.
Amazing.
And so are my other children are doing really well. My son has just graduated university with a first. He's dyslexic with ADHD, but he's done it. Our children can achieve, but they're not going to if everyone just thinks that they're naughty or they're disruptive or that they're, whatever. So once we put in that support, because I think that's the other thing people think about. They think, oh, if my child's got ADHD or if my child's autistic, it means that, they'll never be able to be successful in life. Whereas actually, when you look around, there are so many very, very successful people with ADHD. There's very successful autistic people. It's not a barrier to success, but what can be is not understanding our own needs and getting the right support and accommodations.
Please tell us a little bit more about the support that we could expect or may be able to have access to in school, or for our child, rather.
So in schools are aware of ADHD, they're aware of autism, and they can do things like give your child movement breaks so they're not sitting for too long and getting frustrated. they can do things to help children organize and know what they've got to do next. They can, I would tell the children what to do, but I'd also have it written out and have something visual to remind them. Because some children, they're listening, they've listened to it all, and as soon as you go, right, off you go and do it, their minds go blank. Right. So having a visual thing to remind them what to do. Some children might need to work in small groups. There's also different aids that you can have in the classroom now. There's actually different equipment that you can use that can help. You can have ear defenders because very noisy classrooms could be very hard. And you can have, support from a teaching assistant and down to actually being in a specialist setting if you need to work in a place where, there's fewer children, more adults.
And what about in the home setting? Because obviously that's school setting. What can families do to support their child with ADHD or autism in the home setting whilst all of the, assessments and everything else is going on? What can we do as a family to help support?
Get to know your individual child's needs, right? There isn't a one size fits all because every person's different. But understanding that kids do well if they can. It's not about kids do well if they want to, right? Sometimes our children haven't got the ability to meet that particular expectation. So, and if they can't do it, then us punishing them isn't going to make them be able to do it. And us having a sticker chart and saying, I'll give you a sticker if you do it, isn't going to make them be able to do it either. What we have to do is look at, okay, what is it they can do? What is it they can't do? And help them work, do a workaround. So, for instance, having visual things to remind them, having reminders. I mean, I have to say, my life is ruled by my Alexa. I'm saying it quietly so it doesn't go off. But that. Right, that's my personal assistant. I know I don't have a memory that will just keep things in there. I can shout things into the air now, and she'll remind me later. We can use those with our children as well. We can get them using these sort of things to help them with reminders. We can help them learn strategies to organize themselves. There are different exercise you can do to help improve your memory. There are different techniques to help with your emotional regulation. So we just need to understand their needs first and then work with it so that they learn what they need. They learn to advocate for themselves. And it keeps their self-esteem intact because so many of us grow up thinking we're broken. There's something wrong with us. And then that leads to terrible mental health later, but it also leads to people getting, fed up with school because they think they're stupid. So there's no point.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And it certainly sounds like, if we can make sure that all families, all children, all young people have the help now, then we can make sure that they achieve every potential that they have as adults as well and live that, wonderful, fulfilling life that they all deserve as well. Yeah. Now, we mentioned earlier, Nora, Dr. Yasmin, as well, about how it seems like every other week, there's somebody on the news, some celebrity who was self-diagnosed and has now had a referral and they've now been diagnosed with ADHD or autism. And it makes complete sense why, they've been like that. But are you seeing this a lot more in adults now as well? Are you seeing that there's more awareness and people saying, well, actually, I have this condition and I now want this label to help me?
I run courses for parents of children with ADHD. And I run these courses. They're 6 weeks long, and I do them online so people can do them at home. And what I find is that as the course goes by, parents start saying, you're describing me. So they come on it for their child. But the more they learn about it, the more they're going, do you know? That's me, and this is, and I think quite often it can come as a shock if a professional, perhaps a teacher or somebody, says your child might possibly have ADHD or autism, because It runs in families. So many of us go, no, they're not. They're fine. I was just like that when I was a kid. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that doesn't mean they don't have ADHD. It could be the other way around. And, you know, and so we see that a lot as well. And because I know that with my children, I never suspected it when they were young, because it runs through my family. So the way my kids were, I had cousins like that. I had other people in the family like that. It wasn't unusual. But now that we've got more awareness, we start seeing it more, and then we see it in ourselves. And yeah, then we kind of get, oh, okay. Yeah, now it's all starting to make sense. And we can go back through, you know, I realized my dad was very probably autistic with my understanding now. Whereas, you know, we just used to tell people he was very shy. And he was a very shy, very quiet man, you know. But now, and you know, he was born in 1922. They weren't diagnosing anyone as autistic then, you know. But I look back, and there are so many traits that, you know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. People break down to personality, don't they? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dr. Yasmin, what about medication? Because, yeah, there seems to be something for every condition out there, and people will say, well, give my child some medicine, that will sort them out.
Yeah. So one of the reasons, one of the important reasons to have a diagnosis is that it allows you to go on and have medication. We're not allowed to prescribe medication until there's been a formal assessment with a formal diagnosis. So the medication is started by the paediatricians for children. And unfortunately, there is that almost 2 years waiting list at the moment, sadly, for both ADHD and autism diagnosis for children. But so that's the key thing. But other in terms of support, though, of course, the support can start straight away. As soon as you've identified the problems, you can start the support. For adults, when we make referrals, there, just to let you know, there's a couple of questionnaires, one for ADHD, one for autism, and you've got to score a certain score on them to be able to go forward for the referral. And then again, there's long waiting lists for that. But for ADHD, there is medication, and I know that it can make such a difference. I don't know, Nora, if you want to share your story. I always use Nora as an example to tell people how good medication is.
When I got medication for my ADHD, it didn't just change my life. I honestly think it saved my life. It was, you know, as I say, I'd been on antidepressants, I'd been on, you know, whatever. The ADHD medication has been so life-changing. And I know lots of parents, and I really do get it. They go, I don't want to drug my children, because the perception is, if you have hyperactive children, it's like you're giving them a drug to slow them down, you know, and it really, really isn't like that. What it actually is that with ADHD, our brains are understimulated. We don't have enough of something called dopamine in our brain. And another thing called norepinephrine. And so we can't concentrate because our brain is always looking for it. It's thirsty for this missing thing, which is why we struggle to, we're looking for something to stimulate our brains. Once you take medication, that it's not looking for that anymore, which means that you can concentrate. So I can just sit and get on with stuff. And it's not addictive. It's out of your system straight away. There's people worry, they go, but if they take these now, maybe they will take drugs when they're older, you know. Whereas actually what's been found is that it's far more likely that you'll turn to illegal drugs or alcohol if you're unmedicated, because your brain is looking for that thing. So actually taking this medication is life-changing for so many people. And I do completely understand any parent having reservations about giving their child any kind of medication. But when I see the difference, and you know, so many of the families I work with, they go, I was so reluctant to do it, but you know, it was getting worse and worse, and whatever. And eventually we decided to, and I wish I'd done it a long time ago now, because it was helping them so much.
So yeah, so definitely if there are parents listening in and they're thinking, actually, I want some more advice on this, then please do make sure you do go along and see your own version of Dr. Yasmin, or Dr. Yasmin if you're in that right area, and get some medical help and guidance on that. Please remember, this is just a show. We are simply providing advice on a general note here. Your GP will know your condition and situation better. Nora, please tell us about BRU. What's it stand for? Tell me again.
Right, so it's Birmingham Resilience Education and Wellbeing Services. Yeah, you don't need to remember all that.
I
BRUS is
love
what we
that.
call
Please make sure you
ourselves.
do give us a tea bag with it as well. A nice
Well,
tea.
that was the thinking, was that actually, and if you look, our logo has got a teacup in it, because I honestly think that one of the greatest things you could do is sit down and talk to a friend over a cup of tea, to talk to someone who gets it. And one of the things when you are dealing with this is that you feel so judged by so many people, that actually just to talk to other people that get it really helps. And so what we do at Bruise is we offer a 6-week course. It is free. We are funded by Forward Carers, who are amazing, Birmingham Forward Carers. And it's there to support parents, because the effect on parents' mental health is really so extreme as well. If you're not sleeping and you're constantly worrying about the school ringing you up to tell you that your child has done something at school. So we do a 6-week course. It's online, so you can sit at home in your dressing gown with your camera off and just do it. And we go through what ADHD is, how you can help. We help you make a sensory profile for your child so that you know what their individual needs are. We look at ways of tackling behavior, with the understanding that they're not choosing to do this. So how do we deal with it? We look at all of this. But the other big thing that we do is we put you in contact with other parents in the same situation. And that is, for a lot of people, say it's the best thing, to know you're not alone. Our sort of thing that we say in every meeting is, your child is not broken. You are not failing as a parent, and you are not alone. And once you've done the course, we have a coffee and chat every Thursday, where you can, so we keep in touch with each other. You can talk to other parents. We've got a private Facebook group. And we organise other things so that support continues, and you can always come back for support whenever you need it, because we don't want to just say, here you are, 6 weeks, bye. It's that continued support and building that community, that you've got other parents that you can, and we have a lot of people getting really emotional saying, this is the first time I've really felt I could open up, because there's no professionals. We're all people with lived experience. That you feel you can talk about stuff that perhaps you wouldn't even talk to your own sister about, or someone else in your family, because they might judge you. Whereas in our group, you know that everyone there is going to go, oh, I've done much worse than
Yeah,
that.
that's amazing. Where can our listeners get more information about Bruce, please?
So you can email us. I don't know if there's any way of you getting an email address out to your audience, but it's
Absolutely. Please share it with us.
Yeah, so it's contact us at bruiseeducation.org. Our website's in development at the moment. It's constantly in development because I'm never happy with it. But we've got a Facebook group, we've got a Facebook page, Bruise CIC. You can also contact Early Help, and they can put you in touch with us, because they know about us. And yeah, just drop us an email. A lot of schools in Birmingham know about us. They should all know about us. Again, they could go to school
Super.
and ask to be put in touch with us as well. And we really are here, because we were set up. I set this up to give the support that I wish I'd had back then. So it's run by parents. It's run by, I say, I've got ADHD myself. I've got kids with ADHD, and all of us have. So you don't feel that you're being judged, or that someone's reading out of a textbook. We know that you're not, you're doing great. You're doing great as a parent. And yeah, there's going to be things you go, I should have done it better. But obviously, you know, none of us, we're not saints. We're human beings, right?
No, and that's it. There's no guidebook, is there? So it's really great that you've actually set up this organisation to help families out there. And of course, if any parent out there is thinking, I've forgotten, I didn't get time to write that down, or you think about it afterwards and you want some more information, then please do dial into the studio. We will make sure that you get that information, and we will make sure we share the website, which is in development, but the Facebook page.
Yeah, we've got a Facebook page and an email address. And I have a phone number that I can give you as well.
That's fantastic.
Can I just add in, though, Nora, although it's Birmingham Resilience Education Wellbeing, you're happy to cover, because I know some of the listeners will be from outside of Birmingham. You're happy to sort of help people, can I say, across the West Midlands? Or is that expanding it too far?
We're on Zoom, you know, a lot of the time, so it doesn't matter how many people are there. You need help, just come and get help. But, you know, what we do encourage is people trying to do more and more is set up kind of local networks so that we have local support groups. Because, again, that cup of tea, having someone in your area that you could talk to, you know, they might not be able to do practical help, but they can listen, you know. Our Facebook group's there to give advice. If, you know, has anyone else had this? What did you do? But sometimes it's just to have someone who can listen and go, I know.
I understand. That's it. You're absolutely right there. And I think that has been such an amazing show. You've just shared so much information with us, both of you. I sort of feel like it really is time to go and put the kettle on and have that brew. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Yasmin, Nora. Absolutely, what an amazing show. Thank you so much. And thank you, listeners, for joining in. And as I mentioned earlier, please, this is a show on guidance. If there's anything specific you want to go and talk to, please go and speak to your GP or a medical practitioner about this. You will have your own Dr. Yasmin somewhere, so please make sure you do reach out. And there will be versions of Nora as well. So please, if you're thinking I'm far out of the area, I need some advice, then please do track down and see if there is somebody there who can give you information like Nora has just provided us with. Thank you so much. I will join you all next week, inshallah. Another great show for Get Families Talking.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any advice given on Unity FM relating to health conditions must be verified by your doctor. General diet and physical and spiritual well-being is discussed on shows, but this is general only. If you have any medical condition or need medical advice, please consult a doctor.
Thank you for listening to the Get Families Talking podcast. Please make sure you do subscribe to our podcast to ensure you never miss an episode. We value your opinion, so please feel free to contact us with your feedback or any other inquiries. Stay tuned for the next episode of the Get Families Talking podcast.